Hey everybody, if you want to tell the world something or sell the world something, head on over to Squarespace because they're going to help you build the website of your dreams. Say you want to sell some custom merch. Well, you can set up your online store. Whether you sell physical, digital, or service products, Squarespace has the tools you need to start selling online. So go to squarespace.com/stuff right now and you will face a free trial. And when you get ready to launch, use our offer code STUFF and then you'll save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. How could you go wrong with Squarespace?
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh, and there's Chuck, and Jerry is on standby on her phone, ready for any issue to arise. We're supposed to text her. Yeah. And of course, that makes this Stuff You Should Know 2022.
The Too Much Information edition.
That's right. And you didn't even say a dish.
A dish. I know. I'm growing up. Look at me.
So how are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good as well.
Good.
So, Chuck, I'm really excited about this one for a number of reasons. One, we get to take a really standard, universally understood part of American history and smash it to bits and explain how it really happened and what it really was and what really went on. I love history stuff like that, don't you?
I do. And this is a good one because it is, if you're like someone who enjoys watching Jeopardy or playing in any sort of trivia nights or trivia games, Trivial Pursuit, stuff you should know, Trivial Pursuit.
Yeah. Available everywhere.
This is just good info. I feel like these kind of questions, it's the Louisiana Purchase is just such sort of a softball kind of thing for trivia games. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean that it's easy. I just mean there's just so much in there. And it's not like people go like, well, how am I supposed to know about the Louisiana Purchase? Like, it reshaped America in ways, or the United States, rather, in ways that were just, the tendrils just kept going and kept going.
Yeah, you can make a really good case that it helped shape the world because, you know, it was the thing that jump-started the United States into, I guess, the initiation of it as a up-and-coming world power.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, we doubled our surface area in size. The United States did.
Boom.
And I saw it likened, Chuck, to the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. And that's where the list ended. They basically said those three things are the most important parts of early American history that helped make the country. And there's a lot of, like, really interesting stuff to it, but there's also, like, a lot of the history that just isn't talked about, doesn't get focused on enough. And like, what's one of the really good things about like living in the 21st century is like, we're really starting to examine that stuff more. And we're taking these really kind of, you know, primary and basic and kind of watered down versions of historical events and like really kind of bringing them to life for better or for worse.
Yeah. I mean, it's not every day that a new burgeoning nation can get the opportunity to acquire about 850,000 square miles.
Right.
Not acres, square miles.
Yeah.
And acquire, as we'll see, more like the right to acquire.
Right.
More like the right to kind of take.
Yeah, which is how it panned out. Oh, I know what you mean. I've done the research. I know where you're going with that.
Well, should we go back then to how the name Louisiana, it sounds Italian when I say it.
Yeah, I don't think that's how it's said.
It's really French though, right?
Yeah. Louisiana.
Yeah, exactly. What was going on was there were people in France there, a lot of people, or from France rather. Mm-hmm. And in fact, they were bold enough to call it New France. This was King Louis the, what would that be, 14th?
Yes.
I'm brushing up on my Roman numerals. And King Louis said, all right, Mr. French Explorer. I'm going to let my friend Josh over here to my right pronounce your name.
Let me try. René Robert Cavelier Sieur de La Salle.
Quite a name, but Louis said, hey, dude, you've got authority to explore all the western part of this area I call New France. You got a monopoly on trade there on buffalo hides. Go knock yourself out. La Salle did just that in 1682, mm-hmm. Floated down the mighty Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico and said, you know what? I'm just going to say all of this area belongs to France, and I'm going to name it after the gentleman who handed over my charter, I guess. And it was with an E at the time, La Louisiane. Mm-hmm. Louisiane?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why the Italian keeps popping up.
I don't either.
The land of Louis. So it was basically they added an L-A at the beginning and then switched out the A for an E, or, you know, that would later become Louisiana.
I wonder if that's what Louisiane iced tea bags are a nod to.
Is it spelled with an E?
Yeah, A-N-N-E, I think.
Oh,
and they take the I out. It's all messed up. I read somewhere, Chuck, that that Cavelier, when he got to the delta of the Mississippi River where it hit the Gulf of Mexico, he like located the indigenous people that lived around there and read a proclamation to them. It's basically he said, hey, can you stand still while I read this? And he proclaimed, like you said, that whole area belonging to King Louis, and they're just sitting there like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, of course they were.
So, but this was how this part of the world, this part of North America was settled. It was by the French, and they figured that, and I mean, this was an enormous swath of territory from Canada down to the Gulf of Mexico, the west of the Mississippi River, all the way to no one
whatever.
Even knows how. Yeah,
yeah,
just go as far as you want. No one had any idea what was over that way, except for until you ran into the Spanish in California. I'm not even sure they were there yet. So that's how the English, the Dutch who were up in New York, the French, the Spanish, how all of these world powers that were running around North America viewed the whole thing. And that was France's. And so France said, all right, awesome. Let's exploit this. We're going to make just a staggering amount of money. And I'm going to let this one particular person in 1712, Antoine Crozat, have the charter to basically develop this territory into New France, like we called it, kind of prematurely.
Yeah, but he didn't get a lot of support from France. They kind of handed this over to him. And like you said, it was such a big area, like, it was just too unwieldy, basically,
right,
to control and maintain and try to manage. And he lost a ton of money. I think it only took less than 5 years when he went back to the king and said, you know what, I appreciate the charter, but with all due respect, I would like to be released from it. And, you know, that was fine. He was released from the charter, but the French expeditions kind of continued there for a while. But it was sort of... you know, they were outnumbered. They were, the settlements were sparse, mostly still indigenous Americans populating the area, mm-hmm. until 1762, when the Seven Years' War happened and France said, you know what, this territory is now going to belong to Spain.
Mm-hmm.
But Spain didn't really know what to do with it either, right?
No, they had, I think, even less of a presence in this, I guess, Louisiana territory than the French did. I saw that even when Spain kind of ruled this area, as far as the European powers were concerned, for 37 years, there were more French officials calling the shots there than there were Spanish officials. And I think they were the greatest minority of all. The greatest majority were the indigenous tribes in the area. But then as far as Europeans went, you had English. You had a lot of French people. You had a lot of people who had come down from Canada, the mm-hmm. Acadians, who went on to become the Cajuns. They were living in the area at the time. And it was just kind of, Spain was just, they just had the thing. They owned it. They weren't doing much with it.
Yeah. So they tried here and there to not excellent results. There was a colonial governor named Don Antonio Del Ulloa, I guess. Would that be right?
I think so.
Or Aloha?
Yeah.
And he said, all right, we own this place technically, guys, so I'd like to try to enforce some of our rules, if you don't mind, about trade. And the French leaders there said, yes, we very much do mind, because you're not calling the shots around here, despite the fact that you, quote unquote, own this land. Mm-hmm. So they revolted, drove him out of the colony in 1768. Spain was able to quash that rebellion, get a new governor in there, I guess they were hoping with a little more backbone, and started saying like, hey, you know, fellow Spaniards, why don't you go and settle that land? Like, we got all this great land. Please go there and farm and try and, you know, sort of stake our claim.
Yeah. Chuck, also one of the reasons that they took so long to encourage people to go do that and just kind of just approach the whole thing with like, it was just kind of there was mm-hmm. because to the Spanish, the Louisiana territory was a buffer between the English and then later on the Americans to the east, and their territory, Texas, Mexico, California, all that to the west. And it was a really just a nice little kind of no man's land that Spain owned
right.
so that they could be like, you need to get out. But they were more interested in it for the kind of distance it put between the English and then the Americans and the Spanish colonies.
Yeah. So it served a purpose to them, even if they weren't as intent on, you know, settling it, I guess. Right.
Right. And then so as far as the Americans were concerned, when America became a country, by the time 1800 rolled around, I think that was the year that Jefferson was elected. And Jefferson kind of approached the whole thing with, we're totally cool. Spain owns the Louisiana territory. We're okay with that right now. Spain's letting us use the Mississippi.
Yeah, huge.
It's letting us use the Port of New Orleans. It's letting us use the warehouses in the Port of New Orleans. These were really big deals because that was how you got stuff out to Europe in North America, was basically out of the Port of New Orleans for a lot of stuff, right? Especially the Midwestern stuff. And as long as things were like that, it was all good. But Jefferson was very smart, and he was like, there's a really good chance things are not going to remain the same for very long. And he was right.
Boy, that sounds like a great cliffhanger.
I think so.
All right. Well, let's take a break. We'll be right back. Jefferson is feeling his oats. He thinks he can tell the future. And as Josh said, he was kind of right. And we'll explore that right after this.
Hey, everybody. It's time you heard about Squarespace. Squarespace has the tools you need to create and sell your own website. Whether it's an online course or custom merch, Squarespace has you covered.
That's right. Courses is a great program. You can start with a professional layout that fits your brand, upload video lessons to teach techniques and skills, and tailor your course with a powerful Fluid Engine editor.
That's right. With Fluid Engine, which is a next-generation website design system, by the way, it's never been easier for anyone to unlock unbreakable creativity.
That's right. And don't forget the commerce side, because after that, you can charge a one-time fee or you can even sell a subscription.
Yeah. So turn your creativity into income with Squarespace courses. And right now, go to squarespace.com/stuff for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use offer code STUFF to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Squarespace. Hey there, are you thirsty? Well, before you take a sip, have you stopped to think about what's in your water? Many conventional bottled waters contain PFAS, harmful substances known as forever chemicals. But you can drink water as clean as nature intended.
Richard's Rainwater collects 100% pure, refreshing drops of rain. Yes, it really is rain, everybody. This rain is caught clean before it hits the ground or becomes polluted with pesticides and contaminants commonly found in groundwater.
Yep, Richard's Rainwater is naturally pure with no need for harsh chemicals or additives. That means no added fluoride, no chlorine, no forever chemicals, no microplastics, no nothing.
And you can enjoy the clean taste of Richard's still rainwater and the long-lasting cold-pressured bubbles of Richard's sparkling rainwater. Just visit richardsrainwater.com to find a retailer near you. That's richardsrainwater.com. And we even have a special offer, don't we, Josh?
Yeah, text STUFF to 25129288 87, and you'll get $2 off a 12-pack case of Richard's Rainwater. Sip the sky. Hey, everybody, we're here to tell you about Viator, a tool that you can use to plan and book travel experiences around the world.
That's right. The Viator app and website make it easy to explore 300,000 plus travel experiences so you can discover what's out there no matter where you're traveling or what you're interested in.
Yep, Viator can help you plan better travel experiences. 300,000 plus travel experiences to choose from means you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy.
That's right. You can also enjoy real traveler reviews to get insider information from people who've already been on the experience that you're considering. Plus, you get free cancellation that helps you plan for the unexpected.
Yeah, and Viator offers 24/7 customer service, so you know you'll get support at any hour if things aren't going as planned. So download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find the perfect travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator. Chuck, that was a heck of a lead up.
I didn't think I was going to quit talking for a second.
Just the whole podcast spills out of your mouth from that point on.
All right. And you're just sitting there like, I thought we were taking a break. So this is like the end of the 18th century. Spain is not doing so hot financially because of just kind of constant warring in Europe for, you know, many hundreds of years.
Oh, dude, it was really bad that century. It was a bad century for the European powers.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's just a money drain on everyone. So Spain is hurting financially. And in just before the turn of the century, in 1799, Napoleon seizes control in France. And he says, you know, what Napoleon wanted to do. He wanted to rule the world.
The Antichrist.
Yeah, well, exactly. So part of that, you know, obviously would include the Americas. And that's not just, you know, the Louisiana Territory, but like all of the Americas, Central America down to South America. Mm-hmm. And so he tried to do so. In 1800, they signed a secret treaty with Spain called the Third Treaty of San Ildefonso.
You got it again, buddy. You're on a roll.
And the Louisiana Territory, which included New Orleans, of course, came back to France mm-hmm. and said, here you go, Spain. We'll help you out with your money problems. And I understand the nephew of the Queen of Spain wants some area that to call his own. So you can have Etruria in Italy, which is now, I think, Tuscany, mm-hmm. Lazio, and Umbria there in central Italy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they said, great. Thank you so much.
Yeah. So Spain says, like a blackjack dealer, is like, I'm out of the Louisiana Territory, and France is like, yes, we've got it back. And from what I understand, Napoleon viewed this largely as a storage and shipping and exporting center. New Orleans was like the crown jewel of Louisiana Territory.
Of course.
But he viewed it more as an assist to the real gem mm-hmm. in the French Empire, which was Saint-Domingue, which is now called Haiti, which was one of the most profitable plots of earth on earth at the time. Mm-hmm. I read, Chuck, that Saint-Domingue, and I looked it up. I'm pretty sure that's how you say it.
Yeah,
I
looked it up. You're right.
Before the revolt in, I believe, 1800, they were just the taxes alone that were paid by the goods that were produced there is equal to $12 billion in U.S. dollars today.
Jeez.
Yeah. And that was just the taxes that were being paid, let alone all the productivity. So Napoleon viewed the Louisiana Territory as like the place that all that stuff could come to and then spread out to the rest of the world. That was how he viewed it. The other thing that about the French having it is that Jefferson was like, man, this is not good because we've got really good stuff going on with the Spanish letting us use the Mississippi River and the port of New Orleans. And I don't think the French are going to do that. And he turned out to be right.
Yeah, because they, like you said, they had a sweet deal going. The one thing we didn't mention was that part of the agreement with Spain, because, you know, they still wanted that buffer to be intact. So they, you know, said France can have it back, but like you can't give it away or sell it to anybody else. Right. Okay, Napoleon, will you shake on that? And he went, sure. my word is my bond.
Yeah, for sure.
So that was a big important part of it. Like you said, Jefferson is getting a little bit nervous because New Orleans was very important to us as well at the time. Mm-hmm. Tensions are mounting. In 1802, Spain revokes those rights that they had previously given U.S. traders in New Orleans. And they were like, wait a minute. You said you could keep our stuff here and use these warehouses. They said, not so much anymore. And Jefferson said, Napoleon, he's behind all this. I know he is. Mm-hmm. That little stubby runt, he's I'm trying to keep this clean. Mm-hmm. It's really hard when I'm doing Jefferson because you know that guy.
Yeah, yeah, potty mouth.
Potty mouth. So he said, this is all Napoleon, I bet. And I bet you anything that they're going to shut everything down soon. And so, you know, this got people pretty upset in the early United States. There were people that said, no, let's take it back by force. Mm-hmm. There was a senator in Pennsylvania named James Ross who was very big on that and lobbied for Jefferson to send an actual army down there,
right,
of 50,000 men to take this land.
Yeah, because it was a big deal, you know?
Oh, it was a huge deal. The Federalist Party said, no, you know, screw that. Let's just secede and let's form our own nation, which includes New Orleans. And so things were getting really up to sort of like a fever pitch about whether or not the United States was going to have access to this territory for shipping.
Right. Before we continue, Chuck, I want to show you a little magic trick. You ready?
Mm. Yes.
I'm going to delete 1,000 email drafts right now.
What did I do?
You called Napoleon a runt, and he actually was
average size.
He was. It's a big deal. And it all came down to a difference between the French foot and the English foot.
I know.
Mistranslation, and so he was actually like 5'11".
Right. That's true.
I'm not trying to correct you. I'm just trying to save us from those emails.
I knew that. But my point is, Jefferson, I've seen his diaries. He very much called him a runt, whether or not he was average size or not.
Did he really? Wow. Well, also, Jefferson was like, I think, 9.5 feet tall. So he would have considered someone 5'11 a runt.
Yeah. Anyone under 7 feet tall was a pretty small person to Jefferson.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So because of the Haitian Revolution, like Haiti became the first black-run country outside of Africa in the world because there was a slave revolt. And it was, I mean, that's an enormous deal, even in retrospect. But at the mm-hmm. time, it was like earth-shattering for Europe because, you know, France was making so much money off of this. But, you know, it was having a trickling outward effect on all the other countries as well who were really benefiting from this incredibly productive forced slave labor. And so when that stopped, it had a really huge effect on the economy. And to Napoleon, it was like, well, then what's the point of Louisiana Territory anymore? If it was just a supporting character for Saint-Domingue, and now Saint-Domingue is now Haiti, and we don't have any interest in it anymore, like there's no point in owning the Louisiana Territory. And he started stroking his chin,
mm-hmm.
and he thought,
his average
first
size
he thought,
chin.
I should grow a soul patch.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And then after that, he said, what is a soul patch?
Yeah.
And then the third thing he thought at that moment was, I'm going to sell New France, the Louisiana Territory, to the Americans.
Yeah. I mean, the other reason, too, is like he was mad with power, but he also had a lot of irons in the fire. And Louisiana was a long ways away. So mm-hmm. he was like, you know, and also to take on like more warring now way over there. It's like I'm spread a little bit thin, even though I am everyone knows I'm average height. Right. And everyone nodded and said, yes, yes, yes. And he's like, and history will view me that way. Right. As just an average height person. And they went, right. Yes, sir. Absolutely, sir. And he said, OK. He said, so selling it won't make me look short. And they went, nope, not at all.
He said, okay, well, we'll proceed then. I saw he also thought, Chuck, that it would be really great to basically help a fledgling nation become a really big nation.
Oh, like have a
to
friend?
Hopefully balance out and temper, well, more to be an enemy of his enemy, which was the
sure.
Brits.
Right.
And to kind of give the Brits a run for their money. So he did all these things in one master stroke, which is selling the Louisiana Territory.
Boy, looking, I mean, things were just wild back then with world shaping stuff.
I would argue that still goes on today.
Not like that.
No? Really?
I mean, do you think?
NATO's fighting a proxy war with Russia through Ukraine right now. So I would say so, yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, these things happen. I'm just saying it seemed like back then it was happening everywhere all at once. No.
Yeah. I still think that it happens today. I don't know.
But
though.
Not everywhere all at once. Like Canada's not at war with the U.S. to try and take territory. And
that's
Mexico's...
Canada's greatest trick is convincing the world that they're laid back.
Are they laying in wait? Mm-hmm. Oh boy, mm-hmm. That's all we need.
Yeah. 10 million guns, Chuck. That's all I have to say.
All right, so this is let's call it 1802 because that was the year that it was, mm-hmm. And Jefferson. And, you know, it takes a long time to get word about stuff, as I realized when I was reading this.
Yeah.
Jefferson doesn't know, you know, that Napoleon's hatched this plan to sell this territory back, or not back to us, but to us. Mm-hmm. So he orders our minister to France, Robert Livingston, mm-hmm. to go to France to their foreign minister and say, his last name was Talleyrand, great name, mm-hmm. and say, hey, listen, we'd like to put a stop to the acquisition of the territory from Spain unless it's already finalized. And in the back of his head, he was like, if it is finalized, you know, maybe go over and see if you can buy New Orleans. See if they'll put New Orleans up for sale.
Yeah.
And he went, okay, I'll go over there. And he took a future president with him, right? Or was he former president?
Future. I think All we'd right. only had...
Yeah, I always get the two, order mixed up there in the three? Early days.
I think Jefferson was the third. I really hope Jefferson was the third. But yeah, James Monroe went along to help Livingston too. And they started negotiating. They were authorized to spend up to $10 million. And they started negotiating with a guy named François Barbet Marbois. And he was a politician. I don't think he was the foreign minister because I think Talleyrand was the foreign minister, right?
Talleyrand was the foreign minister, correct.
Okay, so Barbet Marbois was a politician who was close to Napoleon, who was instructed to basically broker this deal. And then Talleyrand came along and said, I'm going to help out too. And so as they started to talk and negotiate, I think within the first couple days maybe, Barbet Marbois and Talleyrand said, henceforth known as the French contingent, they said, hey, how about this? Would you guys be interested in purchasing the whole Louisiana territory? And Monroe and Livingston were like, oh my God,
yeah.
Play it cool. And they're like, oh, I don't know. I think Monroe like examined his fingernails and said, we'll think about it.
Right.
We might take it off of your
hands. Yeah, how much do you want? And the French said, $22 million. And
they went, oh my God,
he leaned over and said, well, if Jefferson wanted $10 million for New Orleans, mm-hmm. $22 million for all of it's not a bad deal.
No. And and Monroe said, ixnay on the eel day.
Wait, what would that be?
Nix the deal.
Oh, nix
Which
the deal.
Actually is the opposite of what he would have said. But anyway.
Well, he said, let's try and talk him down.
Yeah, I think they countered with $8 million.
Right. They settled on 15, just $5 million more than he was authorized to pay for New Orleans alone.
Right.
You get another, you know, 845,000 square miles.
Right. That is a bargain. And that's how this whole thing's gone down in history, as far as most people look at that. The French made a terrible real estate deal and the Americans made out like bandits. Because I think National Geographic said it was equivalent to $15 million at the time was equivalent to $342 million mm-hmm. in 2020 dollars.
Still cheap.
I did the math. It's up to $394 now.
Okay.
But at the time in 2020, that came to about 91 cents an acre, which is, I mean, in today's money, that's 91 cents an acre. So it's an incredible deal. So of course they went for it. But like you said, that the mail was really slow at the time. So they couldn't wait to get authorization from Jefferson. They had to just decide on their own that this was too spectacular of a deal to walk away from, and they were going to spend 50% more than they were authorized to buy the Louisiana territory, and they did. And it took 2 months for Jefferson, the president, to find out that this deal had gone down.
2 months.
Yeah.
So yeah, there wasn't time to go back, then spend another 2 months getting word back to Napoleon's party, the French contingent, excuse me.
Right. And apparently the whole, they were putting pressure on the Americans by saying like, well, Napoleon's reconsidering this deal.
Right.
And the Americans were like, okay, all right.
Classic
fine.
Move. Yeah. He's not really sure now. The offer might be off the table. So they announced the deal 4th of July, 1803. Most people in the United States were obviously super psyched, but not everyone. It seems that people in New England were, they had a problem with it. They were like, hey, listen, we are kind of broke anyway, and we've already got enough land. Like, who wants 850,000 square miles to have to take care of mm-hmm. when we're a fledgling nation? And what we need now is to keep our coffers full. And Massachusetts Congressman Joseph Quincy said, you know, we should secede because of this. There was a lot of threats to secede. Thank goodness that doesn't happen anymore, right?
Right.
But they, you know, that didn't happen, obviously. There was another issue, which was that Jefferson was a real strict constitutionalist and did not believe in a president just sort of exceeding their power. And he was like, you know what? I don't even know if what we did was strictly legal.
This guy helped write the Constitution.
Yeah. And he was like, can you have someone check that? But I don't think we're allowed to even do this, are we?
I mean, he was right. No, there's no, if you limit the presidential powers to a strict reading of the Constitution, no, nowhere in there does it say the president is allowed to acquire land for the nation.
Right. I mean, they can go buy a condo or something if they want to privately.
Sure. You know,
I think
the condo White House is what they call that. White House West.
Nice little place on the Pacific Ocean.
That's right. But he was worried about this. So he said, like, hey, maybe we should pass a constitutional amendment about this.
Yeah. And they, you know, everyone was kind of debating. They were like, you know what? I don't think we need to add a constitutional amendment. I think it's probably okay. You know, all the early brilliant minds and early U.S. government were trying to figure this out, kind of thinking that, hey, we got to move through with the purchase and we'll kind of figure it out later. If we need to add an amendment, maybe we can do that retroactively. Mm-hmm. And then his Treasury Secretary, Albert Gallatin, said, you know what? This should be allowed under your authority to make treaties. That's how I read it, at least. Mm-hmm. And Jefferson said, that sounds good. Let's debate it. They debated it in 1803 in October, and the Senate voted 24-7 that it was all good.
Yeah, which makes sense. I think it was upheld later on in 1823 by the Supreme Court by no less than Jefferson's political rival, John Marshall. Mm-hmm. Justice John Marshall said, yeah, actually, this is totally correct. The president's allowed to make treaties under the Constitution, and you can acquire land through treaties. Ipso facto, the president can acquire land. And ever since then, that's just been, you know, part of America. Although it'll probably be reversed in the next couple of years.
How about a break?
Yes.
All right, let's take a break, and we'll talk about the fact that this really wasn't a purchase outright.
Hey there, are you thirsty? Well, before you take a sip, have you stopped to think about what's in your water? Many conventional bottled waters contain PFAS, harmful substances known as forever chemicals. But you can drink water as clean as nature intended.
Richard's Rainwater collects 100% pure, refreshing drops of rain. Yes, it really is rain, everybody. This rain is caught clean before it hits the ground or becomes polluted with pesticides and contaminants commonly found in groundwater.
Yep, Richard's Rainwater is naturally pure with no need for harsh chemicals or additives. That means no added fluoride, no chlorine, no forever chemicals, no microplastics, no nothing.
And you can enjoy the clean taste of Richard's still rainwater and the long-lasting cold-pressured bubbles of Richard's sparkling rainwater. Just visit richardsrainwater.com to find a retailer near you. That's richardsrainwater.com. And we even have a special offer, don't we, Josh?
Yeah, text STUFF to 25129288 87, and you'll get $2 off a 12-pack case of Richard's Rainwater. Sip the sky. All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
If you haven't heard of Visible, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible.
That's right. It's even in the name. Use code STUFF20 at checkout to receive $20 off your first month. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month every month, taxes and fees included.
Yep. Again, use promo code STUFF20 and you'll receive $20 off your first month for listening to this podcast. Save on wireless with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. Switch now at Visible.com.
For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month.
Okay, Chuck. So up to now, we've basically just been laying down the generally understood Louisiana Purchase, maybe with a few more details than most people know, more than I knew before we started researching this, I should say. Mm-hmm. But at this point, we reach like the actual geopolitical layer of this historical event, of how the people at the time understood what was going on. Because in retrospect, like I said, everybody looks at the Louisiana Purchase like the greatest real estate deal of all time. If you look up greatest deal in history, the Louisiana Purchase is cited as the greatest deal ever in almost every return on whatever search engine you use, right?
Yeah.
So at the time, they didn't really consider it that. It wasn't like a purchase of land. Instead, it was a transfer of what the French had acquired through the doctrine of discovery, which is essentially this kind of, again, a geopolitical layer, a legal fiction that is laid over actual land that basically says, if you go to an area and you find people there, but they're not Christians, you can claim that land as yourself and deal with the people who are indigenous as you see fit without interference from the other European powers.
Right. So that's what they purchase. You could call it a preemption or a territorial abstraction, but yeah, it basically meant we almost bought the right to steal that land from Native Americans.
Yeah.
Without Spain or France laying any claim to it.
I would agree with what you just said fully, but I would remove almost from it.
Right, fully, I guess is the word I meant.
Yeah, it's crazy. And that whole doctrine of discovery thing, by the way, came from a papal decree from 1492, coincidentally, where the Pope said essentially that, like, if you find a place that's considered terra nullius, which is unpopulated, essentially unpopulated by Christians, that's your land. So it was basically legal cover for the genocide that followed from that point on.
Yeah, and it's at this point that I'm going to recommend again. I know I mentioned it before, but the great documentary series from 2021 called Exterminate All the Brutes. You, of all people, would love it. It's really good. You would love it. Raoul Peck's series explores basically, it was on HBO, I think. But
okay.
Just sort of the history of colonialism, but more than that, the way he tells it through a modern lens and just sort of from the dawn of time, once people started being mean to each other, basically.
Yeah.
Really, really tough, heady documentary series. So,
yeah, it sounds like my Friday night for sure.
Well, several Friday nights, but yeah, sure.
Okay.
If you watch that all in one Friday night, then it's a very dark Saturday to follow.
So, okay, I'll check it out. What's it called again?
Exterminate All the Brutes.
Okay, I'll check it out. Because I happen to have HBO Max.
Oh, well, me too.
So maybe it's on there.
For my money, one of the best streaming services.
So, just to kind of button this whole thing up, basically what happened under the doctrine of discovery and the preemption that America bought from France said that you can go do whatever you want with this land. You can acquire it however you want to. We're not going to do, like, you don't actually get any land from us. You get us saying, this is yours now, and the rest of Europe, we have to leave these guys alone while they do whatever they want. This is now part of their sovereign territory.
From one Christian nation to another, basically.
Exactly. That's right. So the thing is that I guess the Americans that were running the show at the time, led by Jefferson, were well aware, like, this is there's plenty of people out there, and probably even more than we realize. I'm sure there's indigenous groups that we've not even encountered yet. He sent Lewis and Clark out in 1804, like the year after the purchase was announced. But they had to get that land somehow. And this preemption gave them the right to either to do it however they pleased. Treaty, paying people off, just straight up extermination. However America wanted to do it from that point on, that was, Europe was just going to sit back and let it happen.
Yeah, and it was kind of a mix of all those things. The U.S. did pay, you know, I mean, it's a lot of money, but it's still not a lot of money, you know.
Right.
About $8.5 billion in modern dollars to Native Americans for the land within the Louisiana Territory, but as we'll see, that happened in a lot of different ways, and there were some modern sort of reparations that happened as a result here and there. There was a land deal, and these are just some examples. There was always sort of the threat of violence hanging over every deal that was made, so you have to factor mm-hmm. that in. Mm-hmm. There was a land deal with a Native nation. This was after, you know, we made the deal with France, and the Sac and Fox Nation sent some people to St. Louis, sent a delegation there to say, hey, you know, we murdered three squatters on our land. I would really like you to not retaliate on us, because that would start a big mess. And mm-hmm. so William Henry Harrison, who was the governor of the Indiana territory and now Louisiana, which was mm-hmm. this is a lot of area that William Henry Harrison was covering.
Yeah.
Signed, you know, put a lot of heat on them, and they signed away 3.6 million acres of land along the Mississippi, including about 1.6 million that was part of the Louisiana Purchase Territory for $3,324 in goods.
And if that sounds like a paltry amount, you're right. But even at the time, it was like the Sauk and the Fox would have considered it paltry, because I read that they made something like $60,000 a season just from selling furs alone. So this was an insulting amount of money. Supposedly, William Henry Harrison was like particularly adept at creating these treaties, and this was the first one. And they ended up basically negotiating with this contingent of Sauk and Fox leaders, but also not people who were recognized in those tribes mm-hmm. as having the authority to sign away their land. But they signed something. William Henry Harrison said, good enough. This is legal. We now own that land. Please get out.
Right. And this is one of those that was brought up later in 1973. There was a commission, a federal commission, that looked back on this land deal and said, you know what? It was worth about 60 cents an acre at the time. Mm-hmm. We purchased it for a half cent an acre. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to pay you back now here in the early 1970s, that 59.5 cents. Here's $2 million. And they said, well, wait a minute, though. This is 1973. You're not including inflation or interest. Like mm-hmm. you're paying us for what you owed us in 1804 mm-hmm. using 1973 money. And they went, excuse me, what? Here's your check.
Right.
Just go about your day. And that's exactly what happened.
And that was the first deal, the first treaty that was formed after the Louisiana Purchase that affected land from Louisiana territory, right? And it just kind of went on from there. Some tribes were given money. Some tribes were forced out for no money whatsoever. I think the Blackfeet famously lost 12 million acres and were given no money at all. And they weren't exactly like the indigenous tribes weren't exactly treated like royalty by the French or the Spanish.
Right.
But they weren't forced off of their land en masse like they were once America owned the Louisiana territory.
Yeah.
Like it was a brand new show that they had not been prepared for. They lived and worked and, you know, followed their traditional ways among the French and the Spanish, who, you know, made concessions to them and recognized a lot of their tribal territory and their tribal customs. But they still considered the land belonging to France or belonging to Spain, but they weren't moved off. And then America came along and were like, get out. We've got a lot of people back east and we are spreading westward. And essentially what they did was just continue to push and push and push the Native Americans all the way into the Pacific, basically.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the things they would do is like they would clear out one tribe and the, you know, we call it the West. It was the Louisiana Territory, mm-hmm. To make room to move like an East Coast tribe or a Southeastern tribe or a Northeastern tribe. Then they would move them into that land and say, here, you can have this, but not for long because we're also going to remove you. And mm-hmm. It was just, like you said, it was just sort of shuffling these tribes one at a time, further and further west, which, you know, obviously culminated in the Trail of Tears. Which we had I think that was a two-parter, right?
Yeah, it was.
That was one of the best two-parters we've done, I think.
It rivaled Evel Knievel.
Even Mark Ruffalo tweeted out about that episode.
I forgot.
Hulk himself.
That's right, he did. Hulk himself.
So it was just sort of the beginning of a new day for indigenous Americans. No more, you know, basically sort of living with Europeans and kind of sharing the land. It was like, no, this is ours and we're removing you, you know, permanently.
Yeah. And I mean, just like that 1492 papal decree of the Doctrine of Discovery, America kind of formulated its own stuff, like the Manifest Destiny, which essentially said, like, We were given this land to take it over from coast to coast. This is America was meant to do this, to become this continental nation and become a superpower. And that was used as a reason, like just we were supposed to do it. We were destined to do this. So let's just keep doing it. And another one that was used is that the Native Americans weren't using the land. They weren't putting it to use. So we're going to put it to more productive use and make money off of it, which ipso facto means we should have it. So these were kind of like the rationales for pushing further and further west. And we did it with such gusto, Chuck, that the Louisiana Purchase was signed in 1803. Mm-hmm. 50 years later, the Gadsden Purchase purchased southern Arizona and southwest New Mexico from Mexico, I believe. And at that moment, 50 years after the Louisiana Purchase doubled the size, the contiguous 48 states as they are today was set. 50 years is all it took for us to take over the entire North American continent, aside from Canada and Mexico.
Wow. That puts it into perspective.
We were vigorous, I should say.
So like you mentioned earlier, Lewis and Clark were then sent out because we didn't really know even what we had as far, like the borders were very hazy. They were hazy when Spain had it. They were hazy when France had it. Mm-hmm. They knew the northern and southern borders because you had the Gulf of Mexico and you had Canada and the northern territories. But as far as west goes, they were like, I don't know. And everyone would look at each other. They would look at map makers and they would all shrug and go, I don't know. Mm-hmm. So, in fact, in the purchase, it said they referred to the land, the colony or province of Louisiana with the same extent it now has in the hands of Spain and that it had when France possessed it. And France and Spain both shrugged. So they sent Lewis and Clark out and Jefferson said, hey, when it comes to that western border, just go nuts. Don't feel like you got to really be too restrictive on where this Louisiana territory ends. Mm-hmm. And so they said, how about the Rocky Mountains? And they said, great. That's they sound lovely. Perfect.
Right. And America's national strategy, you could say, was just to keep pushing westward. Right. So when you reached America's border, just keep going. And we would show up en masse. And these British, like the British apparently controlled Oregon territory, which I didn't realize, but it explains Washington and British Columbia's names. And we would just show up along the Oregon Trail. And enough of us would show up that the Brits would finally be like, fine, forget it. Here, just take this. We want British Columbia. You take Washington and Oregon. And we did that in Texas. And that's how we just kept acquiring more and more land, just by virtue of showing up in numbers and being willing to shed blood, pay money, and do, you know, all sorts of stuff to acquire that land.
That's right. Quite a story.
Yeah. And I mean, it's not like this is all just nothing but a negative story. I mean, depending on your perspective, yeah, it's pretty negative in a lot of ways. But also, I mean, it's not like America's just like the worst country that ever existed. Like, America's done a lot of really great stuff for the world, spread democracy, spread peace, done a lot of shady stuff too. I think everybody who's ever listened to the podcast knows that I am aware of that. Mm-hmm. But it's also done a lot of really cool stuff for the world. So in one sense, the Louisiana Purchase helped kickstart that country that would go on to do some really cool, important things. Unfortunately, on the other hand, it gave us the Midwest.
Oh, man. I had a feeling that was building towards a joke, a punchline.
I meant everything.
Good payoff.
Okay. So you got anything else about the Louisiana Purchase?
No. I think I'm well-armed for Jeopardy, though.
Okay. I am, too. Let's get it on, as Alex Trebek used to say. If you want to know more about the Louisiana Purchase, you can search that on your favorite search bar. But also, I'm sure How Stuff Works has some good stuff on it. So why not start there? And since I said How Stuff Works and it's 2010 again, it's time for listener mail.
I'm going to call this support for you, Josh.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
For the whole sans serif debacle. When I, in retrospect, was a little unfair. When I was like, what? You never knew sans serif meant no serifs?
I didn't take it that way at all, but I know how you feel right now because I just QA'd our How Vampires Works episode.
Oh, from back then?
Yes, mm-hmm. And you said you didn't like Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and I was like, what?
All right, here we go. I just listened to the license plate episode, guys. It felt like I had to back up Josh in regards to serif and sans serif. I'm an architect and endured many grueling years of architectural school, during which we primarily prepare graphic and architectural presentations in lieu of exams and papers. So, as you can imagine, the aesthetic mind of a young architect can get obsessed with selecting the perfect font to align with the architectural concept they're about to present. I wasted many hours selecting the perfect font, and as did most other students in my class. I'm now in my mid-30s and have been practicing for over 12 years. And made no connection to the 12 years? Would you hire a 24-year-old architect?
I don't know.
Oh.
If he was precocious and went, he or she, you know, started attending Harvard at 15, maybe.
Okay, all right. Look at me. I'm being ageist. Now I'm in mid-30s. I've been practicing for 12 years. Made no connection to the meaning of serif until 2 or 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. Like Josh, I was well aware of the idea of sans, but never put the two and two together.
Awesome.
You could take everything Josh stated word for word and apply it to me. You guys make me laugh a lot, but this is one of the better chuckles I've had while listening to Josh go on about sans serif, his sans serif revelation, and the likeness to my own. Unlike Josh, though, I never admitted it aloud, and I felt it was about time. So, Josh, thanks for sharing and letting me know that I'm not alone. Kind regards from Tim.
Tim, thank you for that support. That was very nice of you, and I feel like I'm the midwife of helping you birth your own admission.
It just got weird, but sure.
As Bob Newhart would put it.
Yeah.
Thanks again, Tim. And if you want to be like Tim, you can send an email to stuffpodcast@iheartradio.com.
Stuff You Should Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Are you thirsty? Well, Richard's rainwater is caught clean before it even hits the ground. Rain is naturally pure, so there's no need for harsh chemicals or additives. Richard's rainwater contains no chlorine, no forever chemicals, No microplastics, no nothing. Enjoy the smooth, clean taste of still rainwater or the cold pressured bubbles of sparkling rainwater. Just visit richardsrainwater.com to find a retailer near you. That's richardsrainwater.com. And for a coupon, text STUFF to 251-292-8887 and receive $2 off a 12-pack case of Richards Rainwater. Hey, if you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Use promo code STUFF20 to receive $20 off your first month for listening to this podcast. Switch now at Visible.com. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. Two 420-foot vertical speedways, three launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Roger that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 Gs in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.